This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
We are back after a short little hiatus. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I'm your host, Anthony Christensen, joined by Bob Holt and Ethan Westerman to my right. And, of course, Blake Sutton behind the scenes. Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
I'm just glad to be dry. You know, it's raining pretty hard out there.
About to say, I drove through a tropical storm to get here, so if that's not dedication, what is?
That's a good point. I almost took my dog on a walk, and that would have ended poorly, I think. He would have liked it. He loves water, except for when it's bath time. But I digress. Of course, we are here to talk some Arkansas men's and women's basketball. Not a ton of news, really, on either side recently, but we have gotten some, maybe a little bit of recruiting stuff, some schedule stuff. SEC opponents for both have been announced, though the schedule officially will be announced at a later date. Just kind of starting on the men's side with recruiting. It's been pretty quiet lately. Obviously, DJ Wagner was on campus on a visit and still hasn't committed, or at least hasn't announced a commitment to this point. But John Calipari has had some interesting thoughts, comments on roster construction, saying, you know, he would prefer to have, you know, 8 or 9 guys so he can have those guys to work with, as opposed to having, you know, a full roster of 13 scholarship players for, you know, the guys at the end of the bench to go and transfer out. You know, Bob, I assume you're well-versed in these comments. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on John Calipari's thoughts on roster construction.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you definitely see some teams that don't have a full 13 guys. You know, when the season starts, somebody left and they didn't replace them. But I've never heard, don't recall a coach ever saying, well, I want to have 8 or 9 and just cut it off there. Of course, we never had NIL before that. And some of it might be, well, you really don't have enough money left to recruit, you know, bring in the kind of guys you want. But, I mean, it's interesting. I think it's a good concept as long as they stay healthy, you know, and there's, you know, no issues with anybody. If you lose a couple guys, you know, for somebody, so I mean, obviously I hope this doesn't happen. If they lose somebody early, like a Trevin Brazil gets lost, you know, for the season to his knee injury 9 games in, but all of a sudden, you know, you get thin pretty quick. And it's a long season, and then you want your guys at their best, you know, obviously when March Madness comes. So I think it's an interesting concept, and it might work really well as long as you know, can stay healthy.
And Ethan, talking about, you know, those, I guess, injury concerns, maybe depth concerns, while he was in Little Rock doing his Razorback Roadshow, he kind of brought that up and said, well, if we lose 1 or 2 guys, then 6 guys are going to be really happy with their playing time. But I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, do you think it's good to have, you know, a shorter, you know, a smaller roster, I should say, you know, even in light of those concerns?
I do personally, just because it's kind of, we've seen it with Musselman teams recently in the past few years. You look at the roster at the beginning of the year, and he's very keen on Musselman and just kind of loading up a lot of talent, has options, you know, if one guy doesn't pan out or whatnot. But you did get in a situation a lot of the times. I think this year was one of them where, I mean, number one, just not much went right this year for that team, but had a hard time finding any sort of rotation. And you felt like there were guys that might be capable if they got maybe a little more flow, a little more just playing time consistently. It's a different approach, because I think whenever you have fewer guys in the rotation, you are trusting them a lot more and giving them kind of right off the bat some confidence of like, hey, I'm rolling with you guys. You don't run into that situation like how we've seen the past few years, where there's some really talented guys that have been on some of these teams that just don't even really see the floor. So I do think it's not like one way's right, one way's wrong per se. I do think you do worry about if somebody gets injured and you have a little bit shorter of a bench, but like, I think that's why you go and get, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys, because chances are you aren't going to have that many get injured. But I would say, like, maybe stick on the end of trying to get 9 or 10, because you just never know. But I really do like the approach of having kind of the you know, your guys, just in keeping your rotation pretty tightened up.
Yeah, and I guess just kind of looking at it right now, obviously it's been pretty quiet. We kind of know, you know, who's on the roster right now. I guess looking at, you know, the guys on the team, I guess what do you guys kind of view as the biggest need? Is it, you know, kind of a more experienced point guard, somebody like a DJ Wagner, or is it maybe a backup big to go behind Jonas Adu? What do you guys kind of, I guess, think is, you know, something that, you know, Calipari and staff need to go and grab out of the portal?
Yeah, I think maybe another ball handler, like a DJ Wagner. He'd be an excellent pickup. I mean, he's a guy that played pretty well last year as a true freshman. Obviously, he played in this system with these coaches that followed John Calipari from Kentucky to Arkansas. And, I mean, yeah, I think both those areas you mentioned, another big and another point guard, you know, if you get foul trouble. Another thing is if a guy's just not playing very well or maybe not doing what you want him to do, then the bench can be a big motivator. But you got to have somebody else to put in that's not going to have a major drop-off, hopefully. And so, but, yeah, I think they're probably their number one need would be another ball handler.
Ethan, do you have anything to kind of
I'd agree. I think DJ Wagner, that's why people are kind of like maybe a little worried right now just because of the quietness of it. I mean, it seems to me like from what I've heard, it's the chances are DJ Wagner will end up being at Arkansas. It's just, I mean, that's more likely than anything else right now. But I do get it. Like, I'm not going to be the one to sit here and say, like, hey, don't think this is a little bit weird that, you know, it's just been quiet for this long. But I think that's why people are so kind of just kind of nervous about it, because they know that he's someone who could really help the team. They do need another ball handler like that. So I'd have to agree with Bob.
And in Little Rock, John Calipari, somebody in the audience screamed out a question about DJ Wagner. He said he can't talk about recruiting, but then he made the point to talk about some of the guys who have already signed, who he is, you know, allowed to talk about, saying that their dads played for him, and then, you know, another guy's dad also played for him, which you would assume would be DJ Wagner. But, you know, in terms of recruiting, I mean, I think just kind of looking at it from what you were talking about, you know, the quietness of it, people maybe being a little bit worried. I think that might also kind of stem from, you know, when Calipari was first kind of introduced, there were kind of a steady flow of kind of guys coming in and, you know, committing, signing, and all of that. So maybe the quiet, especially for a little bit of a prolonged period, is what has some people on edge, given what I guess the precedent was before. But then kind of moving on towards the schedule, as John Calipari said, in Little Rock, there is no schedule, especially now that they're not going to be participating in the MTE in San Diego. Unfortunately for myself, Bob, I was going to look for, you know, some good spots on the beach and, you know, some good bars for us to go to in San Diego, but we no longer get that opportunity. Of course, you know, we talked about, you know, CBS, ESPN have already reached out about, you know, participating in some of those events. I guess just looking at it from I guess that, you know, 30,000 foot view, I guess, what do you guys kind of hope to see from, you know, I guess, John Calipari's first schedule?
Well, let's just be real. Like, right now, Arkansas basketball with John Calipari, it's very marketable. Just, like, people are going to want to have them on TV. It doesn't surprise me at all that he made these comments about ESPN and CBS reaching out. I mean, it was the number one basketball story of the offseason in college basketball. I don't think they're going to struggle to get big time made for TV events to want them to come play in it. I guess it's just one of those deals where it's like in your first season, how risky do you go, I guess, is the way to put it. Just like, do you really want to load up with just a ton of really marquee hard games and just to, you know, get more eyeballs on you? Or how do you balance it out with, you know, getting some wins on the schedule early to just kind of pick up some momentum early in the year? But I don't doubt at all that they're going to get a few really big time non-conference games. what that looks like, we don't know. It was kind of that tournament in San Diego that got canceled. Like, there was opportunity for big time games there. Like, Purdue was one of the teams. I know BYU was. I'm forgetting some others.
Notre Dame
was there. So those were a few right there. And that's just been a report, by the way. So, like, nothing absolutely confirmed. But if the reports are true, then, yeah, right now we don't really know. But I would tend to think that CBS is not going to, you know, be opposed to having a John Calipari Arkansas team on its network.
Yeah, I mean, that San Diego thing was probably, you know, that's Eric Musselman's hometown. I guess as much as a person who's moved around a lot with his dad being a coach, and then Eric obviously found his dad into coaching. You know, it's obvious San Diego, that's his favorite place, I think, on earth. That's his Disneyland or whatever, and that was more of an Eric vehicle, I think. And yeah, I think you'll see Arkansas playing a couple of those big events, whether it's New York or Chicago or LA, wherever, just like Kentucky did. But you also have to play. You know, I know fans aren't excited about the quote guarantee games, but when you're a big program like Arkansas, you got to play those to help pay the bills, not just for your program, for a lot of programs. You know, we know football and men's basketball primarily generate the revenue. You know, basketball or baseball, you know, generates revenue, pays for itself more, and plus some. But so I think they're going to play, you know, maybe two or three of those marquee games. He doesn't seem, his days in Kentucky, he didn't seem to want to play home and home non-conference. I know that was a big sticking point with Indiana, playing Kentucky. Indiana wanted home and home. I think he wanted to play in Indianapolis and Louisville. Which, I mean, Indianapolis might as well be a home game for Kentucky and Indiana to me. I mean, you're talking about playing that in the football stadium, and you mm-hmm. pack in 60,000 people or that place holds. But, I think he talked about he likes neutral sites because that's the NCAA tournament, right? And so I think you'll see a couple big marquee games, and then probably a whole that they need to play a lot of those guarantee games to help pay the bills.
I do want to mention, too, I'll be interested to see – you know, we'll be in year two of SEC-ACC challenge. I'll be very interested to see who, because that's all, I believe, ESPN, if it's like last year, kind of determining who's going to be the opponents. I'll be interested to see who they pair up with Arkansas from the ACC, because I could see them once again getting a Duke or North Carolina because of just how much the ratings would benefit from, you know, having that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kentucky's going to play somebody big. I'm thinking, even though Kansas is in the Big 12, maybe they'll just pair Cal against Kansas again, and they pretend they could be in the ACC for one night or something. But yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want a top 10 team to play a bottom feeder in the other league. I mean, like you don't want to see Kentucky play. I don't know. I don't want to throw
Stanford.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking somebody from the – well, yeah, Stanford. Yeah, I was thinking somebody from the – oh, yeah, I forgot Stanford is in the ACC or something
that
like that.
That beautiful Atlantic coastal view from Palo Alto, California.
Talk about Missouri being an academic powerhouse. Maybe just pair them and Stanford up in it.
That would actually make a lot of sense. You know, it would be like the College Bowl or something.
It'd be the closest SEC team.
And I don't know. But, yeah, you're going to see – I mean, obviously, you know, Arkansas is going to be ranked in the preseason, I think that's safe to say. And then also, they're a marquee program. I always tell people, I think behind Kentucky, Arkansas is the number two program in the SEC in basketball, even though, you know, Florida's won back-to-back titles. Arkansas's only got the one on their resume. And you know, other teams, obviously, Kentucky's won more than anybody. But I think, yeah, you pair Kentucky and Arkansas are kind of the Godzilla and the King Kong of the SEC. And so, yeah, I would be very surprised if Arkansas didn't play Duke or North Carolina. And maybe you send them back, you know, to Durham, not send him back, but send him to Durham after Duke had to come here. Because you're talking about two different rosters for the most part. Not certainly on Arkansas, Duke won't have many. I'd have to analyze it, but I know, you know, so you're not talking about it's a rematch for the schools, but really not for the teams, if that makes sense.
I would not complain about a trip to Cameron Indoor Stadium. Just one of the best environments I've ever been in, and that was for Black Friday bye game with Southern Indiana. So students weren't on campus, but Cameron Indoor Stadium just is incredible. If you haven't been, go. If you get the chance, of course. And then kind of sticking in line with schedule stuff, some interesting comments out of Memphis, actually. Penny Hardaway saying he thinks, you know, maybe he can or they can get that home-and-home kind of schedule renewed with Arkansas now that John Calipari was there. Obviously, John Calipari spent some time at Memphis as head coach, played in a national championship game there. Just kind of what are your guys' thoughts on maybe renewing that home-and-home series with Memphis? Obviously, it was a big deal back in the day. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people want it back. Just kind of, yeah.
Well, I believe the last time Memphis came to Fayetteville, there was pretty juicy stuff that came out of the end of that game, right?
Well, yeah. The Dave Walosh and the Memphis radio guy accused Frank Broyles, who was sitting behind him. That's when the press row was on the floor, and accused Frank Broyles of cussing. And Gary Parrish, who's with CBS Sports, now pretty well-known guy, I think if you're into college basketball, he was the beat writer covering Memphis basketball for the Memphis Commercial Appeal. And we were talking in the workroom afterwards, and he told me he was doing a note on it. And I was like, really? You know, and so because I hadn't heard about it. So I did a follow-up. You know, I talked to Frank Burrows the next day, and he said he wasn't cussing, he was fussing. And I actually, with the help of somebody, I heard a replay, and you could hear Dave Walosian going, "Oh, there's Frank Broyles. Oh, he's cussing at our Tigers. Sorry, Frank. Sorry, we had to beat you." I mean, he's really, he's the Memphis radio guy, but he's being like a homer of the ninth degree or tenth degree or whatever that saying is. But you can't hear anything from Frank Broyles. I mean, you can't hear anything. All you hear is Dave Walosian. And so it's kind of a he said. And, you know, if somebody accuses the Arkansas, especially a guy like Frank Burrow, I'm not saying he's never cussed, but I never heard him cuss. I mean, I think he's a very, you know, devout person. And his wife was sitting next. That was another thing he brought up. So my wife was sitting next to me, you know. He goes, he was a big golfer. I don't cuss even if I knock my tee shot into the woods. And so I wrote a follow-up basically saying that Frank Burrow's denied it. And Dave Walosian, I mean, I felt sort of like a defense attorney. Or maybe a prosecutor. I said something like, did you hear it or did you turn around and see Frank Burrows? He goes, well, no, I just heard it. And I said, well, isn't it possible that it was somebody else yelling? I mean, I was being honest because the fans were right there too. And I just, so it was kind of funny. And then John Calipari pissed off a lot of Arkansas fans because he said they weren't going to keep playing because he didn't like having regional rivalries. He didn't want to play. They were playing Arkansas and Ole Miss, which, of course, is just an hour or so from Memphis in Oxford. And he said he didn't want to play regional games. The point being, he didn't want to bring those teams into Memphis where they can, you know, recruit and have a presence there by playing Memphis. And, of course, you know, this was, you know, 8 years or so after Arkansas won the national title. You know, Arkansas fans certainly didn't look at it as a regional program. Like, it's not, you know, Northwest. It's not the University of Northwest Arkansas. It's the University of Arkansas, right? Nolan Richardson had won the national title there and had a bunch of Final Fours and Elite Eights, Sweet Sixteens, and so now it comes full circle. He's back at Arkansas, and Arkansas tried to hire him when they fired Stan Heath, and he just stayed at Memphis, and that was the year they went to the championship game you alluded to, and basically should have beaten Kansas, but they couldn't hit a free throw late in the game and got beaten overtime, I think it was. But so yeah, so that would have an interesting dynamic to it for sure.
And did you have anything to add to that, Ethan?
I'm just here for rivalry, like make it a rivalry. It sounds like it once really was, so just renew it. I'm all about, you know, those regional games that, I mean, it's like Memphis is no slouch at all, and it's right there in Arkansas's, you know, quite literally like backyard, I guess, just across the river. So I'm all here for it. But I just like hearing Bob tell this story because Bob really had to be the, you know, the middleman of, who's lying? One of you is.
Well, another interesting aspect is Arkansas recruited Penny Hardaway really hard. He was a star basketball player in Memphis, and it came down to Memphis and Arkansas, and he chose to stay and play for Memphis. But I mean, can you imagine if Penny Hardaway had come to Arkansas and played with Todd Day and Lee Mayberry and Oliver Miller and those guys? I mean, as good as they were, imagine how many, or maybe there wouldn't have been enough ball to share. You know, people wouldn't have gotten their shots or whatever. They'd have been fighting for the ball, but. So that's another interesting dynamic, is he almost came to Arkansas, or at least certainly considered it. And so, yeah, I think it'd be great to renew. Maybe that is one home and home he would play, especially I know he's still got friends in Memphis talking about John Calipari. And, you know, maybe they'd say, hey, come over and play us, you know. So that might be something that he would listen to his friends in Memphis and say, well, yeah, that'd be fun to go back there and take a team in there.
Yeah, obviously, Calipari did have the, I guess, local rivalry with Louisville. Obviously, that goes back way before, you know, his 15 years at Kentucky. But, you know, it could maybe follow in line with the same, I guess, thing. I don't know. But kind of moving along, obviously, the SEC opponents for both the men's and women's basketball teams have been announced. Obviously, there's not a schedule, so we don't know when, you know, each team is playing where. But we do know who they're playing against. Obviously, Arkansas on the men's side, they'll be playing against Mizzou. That was a weird way to say that. Mizzou, Texas, and LSU, home and home. And then every other team in the schedule or in the conference, you know, one road, one way, one on the road, some on the road, some at home, and that's it. And obviously the big one is they're playing at Rupp Arena, playing at Kentucky. John Calipari had a little bit of a fun comment saying, was anybody surprised by that? I don't think anybody was. I did kind of expect it to be one of the home and homes, but, I digress. Last time they played only once in a season, it was at Arkansas, so I guess it's just kind of balancing the schedule and everything along those lines. But just kind of, I guess, looking at that, I don't know how much can be taken away from it, but looking at that, just kind of what are your guys' takeaways on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought they might play Kentucky twice, but when you have 16 teams, so you're basically trying to schedule 18 SEC games for 15 teams, you know? I mean, each team's going to play the other 15. And so that's hard to do. And everybody wants to play Kentucky, right? And so I'd have to look at Kentucky's schedule, see their three home and homes, but you got to have Kentucky playing Tennessee, don't you? They're two marquee programs right next to each other. You think they've had a long-standing rivalry with Florida going back to the Billy Donovan days. And then I'd have to look and see, that's a big game, Vanderbilt, you know. I mean, you may think, yeah, Vanderbilt's hadn't been that good, but, you know, Music City and Kentucky's got a ton of fans in Nashville, and so I'm guessing off the top of my head maybe those are Kentucky's three teams, but, you know, everybody can't play Kentucky twice, even though that's what they really want to do because it's going to pack their arena and it's going to bring in, you know, TV ratings, and even if they get drilled by Kentucky, they have a lot of eyes on them depending on, you know, if you're some, you know, if you're Georgia or whatever. And so, you know, I think playing to Texas home and home is a big deal to a lot of older Arkansas fans because they remember the Southwest Conference days. And so that makes a lot of sense. And Missouri, even though I guess 0-19 against SEC teams, if you count that loss to Georgia and Nashville where they blew yet another lead. but still, that's something the SEC has been trying to do that in all the sports. You know, that Arkansas is a permanent team with Missouri in baseball and you know, they play in football and so I think it makes sense for them to try to, you know, keep that going in basketball too. And so it's just hard to have all the games you want. But, yeah, certainly him, John Calipari going back to Rupp Arena, that's a huge storyline. And that'll be a big national story. If that game's not on CBS, I'll be shocked.
And then obviously on the women's side, home and away against Texas A&M. They'll have road games against, you know, the likes of South Carolina, Texas, you know, they'll go to Kentucky, which obviously had the coaching change and everything along those lines. They'll host Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, LSU. You know, just kind of those being, I guess, the standout games that have been, you know, announced on the women's side for the SEC slate. I guess, Ethan, just kind of looking at women's basketball schedule, for the SEC, of course. Obviously, we know some of the non-conference opponents for the women's team. But just kind of your general kind of SEC takeaways for the women's team.
Yeah, they've played Missouri home and away every single year since Missouri joined the league. That's kind of like Bob said, how the SEC just pairs them. So this is the first year now with the new women's schedule because the men's side you play 18 games, women's you play 16. So just do the math, you get rid of two of your home and aways. And they pulled Texas A&M for their home and away, so there's not going to be like a permanent home and away rival. You'll just rotate in the SEC on the women's. So they'll only see Missouri once. Missouri will come to Fayetteville. That is going to be the battle for can Arkansas beat them for a 13th time in a row, which is incredibly just crazy to me because they're always near each other in the standings, it feels like. Yeah, Arkansas somehow has dominated that series. But yeah,
and the Higginbottom Bowl, right?
Yeah, Izzy Higginbottom, the new, she played her freshman year at Missouri. She's now at Arkansas after being at A-State for a couple years. So that's interesting. But yeah, they play at Texas, home versus OU. So that's kind of the first taste that they'll get of those two teams, being in conference. But I wrote on this the other day. I know you said SEC, but they will play Oklahoma State as well in a multi-team event in Daytona Beach, which that's interesting because Riley Langerman, who was at Arkansas for a couple years before she transferred to OSU before last season, she'll be a fifth year there. So they'll play a former player. But that's pretty much what we know with their schedule right now.
And then just kind of looking at it, I guess just wish list-wise for both men's and women's basketball, if you have to choose one team you want to see on the schedule, who are you picking, Bob?
You're talking about non-conference or
non-conference,
SEC?
Non-conference, yeah.
I think it'd be cool if they played UCLA. They haven't played UCLA since the 1995 National Championship game, I don't think. And that's a marquee name. I know UCLA is kind of like Arkansas. They had a rough year. But, since they just played Duke, I would say North Carolina or UCLA, one of those two. I know you only asked for one, but I'm
Ethan?
I feel like women's, that's a really tricky question because I'm like, could really just throw a dart on, like, random non-conference. I guess I'd say Maryland. Just because Saylor was fun to cover here, Saylor Poffenbarger, so it would get to watch her. I don't know. That would also kind of be weird to watch her play Arkansas. But, it's hard to pick a non-conference team for Arkansas that you'd like to see them play. I'm trying to think back to their run to the Final Four in 98, if there's any sort of history with the team there that they upset or something. I think they beat Duke. So maybe Duke.
They beat Duke and Kansas. The funny thing was, and I wasn't out there, but they went out to the Stanford Regional. Stanford was the number one seed. Arkansas was an 8-9 game. And I'm trying to remember who.
Harvard beat Stanford.
Harvard upset Stanford, yeah. And I think Stanford was missing a key player or two, but still, that was the 1-16. And then Arkansas, I think, beat Kansas.
They beat Hawaii in the
That's
8-9.
Who it was. Okay.
And then they beat Kansas.
Yeah. And well, they beat Harvard.
Yeah.
Then they beat,
Or Harvard then.
And then they beat, did they beat Duke in the regional final?
Yeah, Duke was to send them to the Elite Eight, I believe. So
yeah.
I guess if we're going historical, how Bob said with UCLA, maybe a little Duke.
Or Harvard.
Or Harvard, they do have the Fairfield Stags on their schedule, which I'm just saying that's going to be a tough game for the women. Fairfield had one loss last year and returns, I think, like everybody. So I'm saying it now. If there's an upset against Fairfield next year, don't call it an upset. I'm saying it right now.
Yeah, ranked in the top 25 for a bit, too, the
yeah.
Fairfield Stags. And then just kind of sticking in line with the women's team, obviously Nick Bradford joining staff, replacing Pauline Love, who went to Alabama. He's from Fayetteville, obviously a local guy. I guess can you just talk about his hiring and just your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I always like to see them, like in any women's basketball program, somebody who's kind of done grassroots efforts to grow the game get rewarded. I mean, he spent the last year as an assistant at Wichita State, and before that was, of course, that Fayetteville High assistant for men's basketball. But he also, all while doing all of this, has been very involved with an AAU team that's produced some great players. Miriam Dowda, who familiar with, she was on the team, actually played for him in this AAU program. I forget, it's Missouri something. But you like to see somebody in the women's game get rewarded who's done a lot of that grassroots effort. I mean, you do have to remember, like, the difference in assistant coach and head coach. A lot of what he's going to be doing, will be that recruiting. Obviously, he'll be involved with, practice and stuff too. But, like, there's such a valuable piece for an assistant coach with just what connections do you have? What have you done to earn trust of players, et cetera? I mean, it's kind of – we talk about it with Kenny Payne on the men's side. There's some people who are great assistant coaches that maybe just didn't pan out as a head coach. He's proven so far that he, any program he's been a part of, whatever level that is, that he adds a lot of benefit and the players love him. So I'd expect that to continue at Arkansas.
And him being a local guy, Bob, you've been around for, a year or two. You ever run into Nick?
Well, yeah, he was a star player at Fayetteville, and Arkansas really wanted him. He went to Kansas, you know, and had a good career there. He wasn't JoJo White, probably dating myself there. JoJo White was a great player in the late 60s and played for the Celtics, some of the Celtics championship games. His name just kind of popped in my head. Or they had a guard named Darnell Valentine when I was there. But and, of course, their coach at that time was Ted Owens, who was and speaking of Kansas, that's where John Calipari was as a GA. And, you know, got it. I think maybe that was his first job or one of his first jobs. But, yeah, so Nick is a Fayetteville guy, but he also played for the Jayhawks. So that's kind of interesting, you know, him coming full circle. The Razorbacks want him as a player. Now they got him as a women's coach. So that's interesting to me.
There is something funny about him at Kansas, too, though. Like, they were good while he was there. And I believe he was roommates. I'm looking this up real quick. I wrote this in my story. He was roommates. Well, there was a lot of NBA guys on that team. Nick Collison, Drew Gooden, Kirk Heinrich. And he was a roommate his freshman year with Paul Pierce. So he was – that just era of Kansas basketball produced some, like, long NBA career guys. He actually played under Roy Williams there for a little bit. I guess his whole time was under Roy Williams. So he's been around some greats, guys.
And that is all of the time we have on today's edition of the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. From myself, Anthony Christensen, Bob Holt, Ethan Westerman to my side, Blake Sutton behind the scenes. Thank you all. We'll see you next time.